Hi, so glad that you're here again, and I'm thrilled to be here as well. This is Carol Murphy. This is Heartstock Radio, and don't forget that you can call in. About halfway through our program, our call-in number is 406-491-1432. So, at first, though, we're going to have a little chat with Jen Boynton, and remember that this is one of our interviews that will be part of our Women in Business segment. We're on Twitter, Facebook, and you can always reach us at heartstockradio@gmail.com. So Jennifer is going to speak with us today, and our topic of discussion will be gender gaps, how they may be different in developed versus undeveloped countries, and the effects and ramifications we all feel when they exist. So we're going to have a little bit of music here. Thanks, Clark. Sit back, enjoy, and we'll be right back. Once again, this is Heartstock Radio, and I'm Carol Murphy. We're here with Jennifer Boynton, and remember our call-in number, about 15 minutes. You can call in and speak with Jennifer directly. Our call-in number is 406-491-1432. Jennifer, please introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell them who you are and what you do.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me. I'm Jen Boynton. I'm the editor-in-chief of an online publication called Triple Pundit. We cover sustainability in the business world, and a huge part of that is gender equality, gender and racial equality. And I'm the editorial director of 3BL Media, which is our home company, which oversees a variety of brands. And I'm about to start a new position in the fall as a professor at Parsons School of Design in their Master's in Strategic Design Management. I'm going to be teaching sustainable business models. So got my hands in a lot of pies and love working in the world of sustainability.
All of that could be a discussion in and of itself, couldn't it?
That's true.
That's a lot. But let's begin with a little explanation and discussion for our listeners about why do we care if there are gaps, gender gaps, and what are the bad things that we see that happen in societies or on our planet when they exist?
Sure. I mean, simply put, it just means that we're leaving over half the population, women, all of their skills and abilities underutilized. And if structural problems are holding people back, then they can't achieve their greatest potential. And in today's economic, social, and environmental world, we need all of the help that we can get to move things in a positive direction.
So I like to think that women add spice and flavor to any organization, and that we really, like you said, we need all hands on deck, especially in this day and age. We have some really major problems and issues that we're facing. So where on the planet are the gender gaps the largest, and where are they kind of minimal, or is there any place on the planet where they are minimal?
No, there's no place on the planet where there's total equality between men and women. I've got some hot off the presses research here from the World Economic Forum, and they ranked all the countries in the world on gender equality based on economic, political, educational, and health criteria. And the most equal countries are all in Scandinavia, Iceland, Finland, Norway, and Sweden. But even Iceland at number one, it's only 87% equal. Women are only 87% equal to men on all their criteria. And at the other end of the scale, it's our friends in Chad, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Pakistan, and Yemen, where it's things are the most unequal between men and women. And here in the United States, we clock in at 45th out of 144. So we're better than half, but not really knocking it out of the park when it comes to gender equality.
So I'm always curious about, especially countries like Iceland, why are things so much better there? What is it about Iceland that makes them rank so high?
Well, that's a question for the ages. I think that focus on democratic socialism in the Scandinavian countries is a big help. There's a focus on equality at the government level, and they're smaller countries, so it's a little bit easier to manage everything. But it comes down to policies that favor equality and lots of education and equal opportunity for people. Lots of education, lots of social programs available to help people get a leg up when they need it, and in return, when they are in a better position, then they can better serve society.
So places like Chad, I would think that that's kind of the extreme opposite, where maybe gender differences are part of their institutions, government, and political and educational.
Exactly, yeah. And this data, I looked over it myself. I was very curious about, you know, whether the fact that a richer country has more money to provide services overall, if that had an impact, and they actually controlled for that. So the research is only based on the gap between what's available to men and what's available to women, as opposed to what's available to everybody. And the things that they look for are labor force participation, wage equality, if people make the same money for the same work, how much education women and men are able to attain, and the number of female policymakers and legislators. So all of these things, it's kind of a death by a thousand cuts that keeps broad swaths of people from achieving their potential.
So what kind of things come up for you when you see these statistics? Do you feel like we're making advances? And, you know, we have such an interesting political climate these days. Some people may say that we're going backwards in this arena. Talk a little bit about that, if you can, Jen.
Yeah. You know, Martin Luther King Jr., this quote's often attributed to him, but he said the arc of justice is long, or the arc of, now I'm blanking on it, the arc of the world is long, but it bends toward justice. And I think that is a really important consideration. We do have ups and downs in the fight for equality, and right now we're in a little bit of a scary situation, as we all know. But that doesn't mean that we're not on the up over the course of 50 years or 100 years. And that's what I try to keep my mind on, is looking at those opportunities. And I think the fact that these things are becoming more overt, that we're more comfortable talking about the issues in society, means that once you name it, then you can do something about it. Maybe 10 or 20 years ago, it wasn't as easy to talk about. And the fact that it's easier to talk about means that things are slowly getting better.
So take a broader perspective. I think that's a hopeful bit of advice. I'm just curious about Iceland in particular, being at the top, and the other countries like Iceland that are up there. Do you think that this was something that came about because of pressure from the people, so to speak? Or was it just part of their culture from a long time ago?
Probably some of both, a nature versus nurture, for sure. It's tough for me to make a statement about countries that I'm not familiar with, so I don't want to say more than that, but I think there are definitely lessons that we can learn from the places where equality, they have achieved success, because it's not based on having more money all around, it's based on having policies that support all people within the society.
Yeah, and you know what? Some interesting data that kind of came to my attention that I find really interesting. When we start looking at organizations such as Grameen, who gives microloans to basically stir economic development in underserved areas and economically impoverished areas of the planet. They did some really interesting research and found that when money is given to women, things happen a little differently than when money is given to men. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So, of course, like you said, when we're talking about microloans, we're talking about like $500 or $1,000, a modest amount of money for us in the developed world, and how that can be a life-changing amount of money for somebody in a different situation. Maybe you can buy a piece of equipment that'll allow you to jumpstart a business, like a cow, or you can put in solar panels so that you can then rent out your electricity for people to charge their cell phones. Actually, what Kiva, which is one of the main nonprofits that runs these microloans, what they've found is that they get really high repayment across the board. 98% of the loans that they extend of these amounts are repaid. And where they're seeing the gap is that more women need the loans because they have less access to funding in their own countries. So they're focusing on investing in women as a good thing because they lack the other opportunities, as opposed to saying, don't invest in men. Men can have great businesses too. I have heard the rumor that that women are more inclined to reinvest the money in their families if they have a business. But I wasn't able to replicate that myself. So let's just we'll stick to saying that there are plenty of women out there who need those types of big investments for them, and that the rate of return is really very high because they're using the money to fund their family's well-being.
Yeah, we don't want to be, anti-men. I mean, we love men. Clark being here, of course. Couldn't do anything without Clark. And, so many other men I think about that I'm surrounded by in life that are such a gift. So definitely we don't want to make it sound like we're male bashing here. But
husband is watching my two daughters right now while I talk to you. So very much appreciate all of the men in my life for sure.
And having said that though, some of the data that I've looked at reflects what Grameen experienced, and that was exactly what you were saying, is when they give money to women, they tended to invest the money back into the community and be more concerned and more protective of the environment. So a little bit of a different approach, which, if we look at women-led businesses compared to men-led businesses, that would be an interesting statistical analysis as well, to see just exactly how women do approach things differently. We've talked about this already a little bit in some of our previous programs. So I guess the point that I'm getting at here is that women are important partners to have at the table. They bring a perspective. Yeah, they bring a perspective and a gift that is needed in all organizations. So, what's your take on why it is that women seem to be underrepresented both in business and government still?
Yeah, I mean, there's a short answer reams of books have been written about it. Answer, it's sexism and it's death by a thousand cuts. Each of these women, potentially has hundreds and thousands of tiny different barriers that hold them up throughout their careers, throughout their education, throughout their careers. Maybe the girl has extra chores. Maybe she's just getting it a little harder from the family. Maybe has some extra pressure to have a family. All of these things add up to make an additional challenge for her, and they add up to real impacts in her life. And, you know, you can see it repeated over and over again if you look at one individual who makes choices in life that suit her own situation. She might make a different choice if she, each of these women ends up making choices for their individual lives, but they end up being across the swath a situation that is really unequal for an entire gender.
Yeah, so in certainly a lot of underdeveloped countries, the like you were saying before, a lot of girls, their education is not priority because they're anticipated and expected to raise a family and stay in the home. So the money and the resources that the family may have are all spent on educating the boys or the males that they may have in their family. So
exactly.
I'm just trying to imagine what it would be like, because I know in my family was very encouraged to get an education and really pushed in a lot of ways to do that. And I'm just imagining what my life might have been like had my family told me, no, you're a girl and you know, girls don't go to school. I would have had a big fight on my hands to buck that whole system to say, no, darn it, I'm going to school. I don't care what you say. So that's that in and of itself.
Maybe you would be able to push through, and maybe, maybe other people wouldn't confronted with the same realities, you know. It's all those little micro decisions that form the larger inequality that we see.
So I guess the take-home message is that if we anticipate or expect or want there to be gender equality in our society, then institutionally we have to remove those barriers and, in fact, put in systems that help women and people who are underrepresented achieve their goals and have equality. That's kind of the bottom line.
Yeah, and especially in this political climate, you know, we're looking to the business community to make a lot of those changes because businesses are finding that increase in diversity can help to boost the bottom line. Just having different ideas, different experiences at the table, and different ways of approaching a problem actually makes business run easier. So we're seeing more and more companies put in really overt systems to improve the number of women and the number of people of color who are employees, and taking a strategic effort to improve that because there's a business benefit to equality.
Well, yeah, and that's a huge point. And it's a little counterintuitive to some of our old paradigms that if you do increase diversity in an organization, it helps the bottom line. I mean, that's huge in and of itself. And
It helps avoiding it. A lot of it comes down to avoiding risk. If you have more different people at the table who have more experiences of the world, you're more likely to pick up on problems before they get really big. One example that from the world of racial inequality, Google was working on a new image recognition software that would look at a picture and say, that's an apple, that's an orange. And it was mistakenly registering black people as gorillas, which is horrifying. And they didn't realize it until the software was out in the public. And the best reason that they can figure out that this happened was because no one on the team, it didn't occur to anyone on the team to, you know, test the software with people with a variety of skin tones to make sure that the recognition was working properly. So something like that's obviously humiliating for the company and requires a lot of rushing around to fix the problem and a huge PR hassle and stress for everybody. And all of that could have been avoided if they had a little bit more of a diverse team working on the project.
So we all need each other. That's a beautiful message. We're going to take a little break, some more music, and when we come back, you'll be able to call Jen.
This land was made for you and Oh, when the sun came shining and I was strolling and the wheat fields waving and the dust clouds rolling as the fog was lifting, a voice was chanting, this land was made for you and me. And as I went walking, I saw it sign there, and on the sign it said no trespassing, but on the other sign it didn't say nothing. That sign was made for you and me. In the shadow of the steeple, I saw my people.
We're back now, and we're speaking with Jen Boynton from Triple Pundit. And if you'd like to call in and ask Jen a question, our number is 406-491-1432. So we're speaking about gender equality and some of the gaps that exist across the planet, how the gaps are different in different countries, and why women are underrepresented in business and government. So business is kind of interesting to me, Jen, in that it seems to be creating more change. This may be a misperception on my planet or on my part. So please tell me if what you think about this. But in my opinion, business seems to be more on the leading edge than government when it comes to making changes. Do you think that's true? And why is that, if it is, or why is it not, if it's not?
Yeah, especially right now, for sure. I think that in general, the business community can pivot more quickly. It's a little bit easier to implement a change in policy in a company that's got a few thousand employees as opposed to doing something at the state or federal level and managing all of the different priorities that we have on the policy realm. You've got to get a lot of buy-in from legislators to even get a bill passed, and it's a much slower process. So I do think that the business community can move more quickly, but it really does benefit from an equal playing field. We see it a lot in the environmental world that even though there's a business benefit to using renewable energy and lowering your carbon use, if a company is working in a system where they have certainty about the policies that they're going to be subject to, it's easier to take the good actions. So they work in concert.
And within the business realm, the business community, there seems to be a huge amount of variance from business type to business type. Can you talk a little bit about that? And some of the sectors, like tech, for example, seems to be a really big sore spot in this regard. Can you talk about that a little?
Yeah, sure. There is no industry where women earn equal pay for equal work with men, even when you control for all factors, like number of years in the business and amount of education. The industries where we see the biggest gaps are male-dominated. So mining, quarrying, oil and gas, finance have the biggest pay gaps. And the most equal industries are probably not a huge surprise either. It's engineering and architecture, arts and design, community and social services, janitorial services, and personal care and service. So those are some of the more stereotypically female types of employment. But amazingly, higher education doesn't alleviate the earnings. There's a pay gap at the high school level, at the PhD level. MBA holders have a pay gap, and MDs as well. The biggest issue across all sectors is what we call the opportunity gap. That's the idea that women and men start out fairly equally in their careers, economically and with the same types of jobs that they get, but over the course of their careers, men get more promotions, move up the ladder more quickly and at a higher rate, And so by the end of their working life, they're at a higher level of their career and obviously a much higher earning level. And that comes back to all those little micro opportunities that we talked about. You know, maybe it's getting that promotion opportunity a little more quickly. Maybe it's getting that networking opportunity with the boss because you're the same. He sees something of himself in his younger employee. All of these little things add up to big inequality.
Yeah, and this is fascinating. In fact, we're going to look at this a little bit deeper in some of our subsequent programs as to why, just to explain and understand and wrap our heads around why exactly this happens and, you know, what behaviors as women we kind of integrate as we're brought up in a culture that basically minimizes our intention to be professional women in some ways. It's very complex.
Yeah.
It's not an easy thing.
It's extremely complex.
Yep.
You know, one of the things that that people often say when they hear this, it's sort of amazing to think, you know, that it's so systemic. And one of the things that people usually say is, oh, well, women don't have as many advanced career opportunities because they're much more likely to leave the job force. They have kids, and maybe they'll come back to work, but they're the primary childcare person at home. Maybe the husband takes the lead with his career, and she stays back because of practical situations in the home. And that's true. That's a big part of the situation. But actually, when they compare male parents and female parents, men's earnings increase by 6% when they have a child, and women's decrease by 4% for each child that they have.
Mm.
Even if you compare, you know, people who are in the same situation, it's actually of benefit to men to have a kid. Makes them look more responsible, stable, all of these good qualities for a male employee, and a woman is going to be seen as maybe being more distracted or not being able to take that extra project or work late. So it's our stereotypes kicking in for sure.
Yes, it's fascinating. And our earlier program with Amy Henderson, we talked a little bit about that. Some of the statistical data that she dug up that really debunked a lot of the ideas that we have about what happens when women and men become parents and how it actually does make you a better employee and sharper on the job. So
that's been true for me for sure.
Yeah.
First of all, parenting is so difficult that it makes any challenge that you find in your work life seem really straightforward to solve. You know, you go to work and people are polite to you and ask questions with their words. And they don't scream in your face or fall on the floor in a tantrum.
Yeah, it kind of forces us to step our game up. I think that's part of it.
And they know that that's definitely true for me as well, that if I know that I'm away from my kids who I really love, I want to be making the most of that time, and that means doing really good, important things in my work because I've got a value-based career, but also just having that personal achievement as well, going for the opportunities that are available because I want to make the most of being away from them.
Yes. So we have just a few more minutes left. Jen, can you tell people how to reach you if they want to carry on this conversation?
I love to tweet. If we've got any Twitter fans out there, I'm at Jen Boynton. And you can always reach me at Triple Pundit, which is our website. And it's contact@triplepundit.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Jen, for being with us and sharing all of your wonderful knowledge. And I know you're an inspiration to me. Thank you so much for being here.
Sure. Pleasure.
This is Carol Murphy. Thanks for listening to Heartstock. We'll be back next week.